Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I am your host, Julia McLaughlin. This episode is sponsored by ReviewRobin, a review management software for marketing agencies to help you guys get your clients more positive reviews. You can check that out at getreviewrobin.com. Now, our guest today is Conrad of Mockingbird Marketing, and today we are going to be discussing dealing with difficult clients. After leading marketing efforts for Avvo, Conrad founded Mockingbird, an online marketing agency focused exclusively on legal. Called the Gary Vee of Legal, Conrad is the author of Own the Map, published by the American Bar Association and the Fine Law Jailbreak Guide. He is a Google Small Business Advisor and has held positions for various ABA's practice management marketing committees. Thanks so much for joining us today, Conrad.
Yeah, I'm super happy to be here. And I want to start off by saying we didn't choose difficult clients just because I work with lawyers, right? There are difficult clients everywhere. There are difficult florists. There are difficult plumbers.
Yep.
It's just that my difficult clients tend, that percentage of clients that turn into the difficult clients, they tend to be really difficult.
Yeah. Well, no, it's something that's super relatable as an agency owner. So I'm really excited to dive into that. But first, let me ask you a couple questions so that our listeners can get to know you a little bit. So tell us, where are you tuning in from today?
I'm in outside of Seattle, home office outside of Seattle, and the agency has really gone over the last 2 years. We've really changed. We used to be all in office.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's huge value for that.
Yep.
And the double-edged sword is you kind of limit who you can work with. And so we've really switched over the last 2 years from in office. We're now completely distributed. We have a couple people in Canada.
Very cool.
We're all over the U.S. and Canada right now, and it's a double-edged sword. It's hard.
Yeah.
I think it's a net positive. I've got some much more amazing people that I wouldn't have been able to get if I'd insisted they'd be in Seattle.
Yeah.
But it's harder to build culture. It's harder to do learning. Like, there's just like a lot of learning that happens when you're in an office together. And so we miss some of that. I'm not sure we're doing it perfectly at this point yet, to be blunt.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's been a lot of growing pains and everyone's had to pivot over the last 2 years. So I think it's a very common situation that a lot of agencies have run into.
100%.
So why did you start Mockingbird Marketing?
Yeah. So I stumbled into the legal industry back in 2006. I ran marketing for a legal directory that was called Avvo. I was, number six person. It was a classic startup story. A lot of what I was teaching lawyers about the internet. We're going back a ways now, but my very first presentation was a presentation called The Death of the Yellow Pages. And I gave this presentation. I'm like 6 months into my new job, and I do this presentation in front of like 450 lawyers, and they hated it. And they argued with me the whole time. And it's not like I need to say now I told you so, but I basically spent 8 years teaching lawyers about the internet and how SEO works. And this is like when the fundamentals were like really, really basic and standard.
Yeah.
There was no Facebook advertising, no TikTok, no lawyers on stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that what I really liked doing was working with these kind of enterprising, aggressively ambitious people to grow their business. And so I spun out and started Mockingbird, and that's been it since then. People ask me, when are you going to move outside of legal? I was like, why? They're honestly a great client. It sounds crazy when I talk to people who don't work with lawyers, but by and large, they're amazingly great clients.
And what do you love most about running your agency?
Oh, this is going to sound really corny. I can't not say this and sound corny, but it's really, really simple for me. My employees, I get to watch their careers develop and their lives develop because of it. I've had people who have gotten married while they worked with me. They've bought their first house. Like, when you have an employee who buys their first house and you play you don't play a huge role in that, but you play a little role in that. That's amazing. That is amazing, amazing feeling. And so it's watching my employees develop, right? And develop professionally and develop from a, frankly, from a pure compensation level. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a corny answer, but it's, we actually put, we deliberately, and I fly this in front of our clients, I put my employees ahead of our clients, right? Mm-hmm. Because my clients run a service business, and the right client knows that treating your employees really well means that that trickles down to doing a great job for their clients. Right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. No, and it's so cool whenever you have that long-term working relationship with your clients and you almost become friends with them. I think that's like the best part, like that. I love that.
Yeah. So it's really watching the employees kind of develop in there. It's such a corny answer, but it's honestly, it's why we have the business.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so what are the biggest challenges that you encounter on a day-to-day basis?
It's a fair question. I would say right now, the biggest challenge that we have had in the last 12 months has been staffing, right? It's crazy.
Yeah.
The staffing challenges have been very, very real. I run the agency on 7 key financial metrics. One of those metrics, and they're put out by David Baker. That's worthy of like looking up David Baker's, I think he calls it the dashboard, or I think it's the David Baker dashboard.
Mm-hmm.
One of those metrics is the percentage of your revenue that goes towards salary, right? And so Baker has a target of 55 to 65, like no more than 60, sorry, 45 to 55, no more than 55% of your revenue should go towards salary. We've consistently been above that, right? And for me, and that's because I'm trying to hire really good people. I also like paying my people well.
Mm-hmm.
And I also live in Seattle, right? And it's stupid expensive here.
Yeah.
And so for me, if that's the one metric on the Baker group of 7 that we've come short on or we fail on, like, I'm okay with that. Like, if the worst my company does is pay our people too much, I'm kind of okay with that.
Right? I mean, if it converts into, you know, happy clients and you're able to just, you know, have a really good, great client retention because of it, it's worth it.
Well, and I haven't done that kind of cold-hearted MBA calculation, but that's the end result, right?
Yeah.
Like we have another metric we call CHUM. It's not churn, because I don't really care about client churn. As we talk about difficult clients, I'm okay losing a lot of my clients. Not a lot. That's not true. I'm okay losing some specific clients.
Yeah.
We take that out of our churn numbers and we call it CHUM, right? And that is an unwanted loss. And our CHUM numbers are very, very low.
Oh, okay. That's interesting that you guys calculate that. Because there's definitely a difference between the two. So that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, so part of this for me, moving into the difficult client thing, is like, you have to be okay losing clients.
Yeah.
You have to be able to walk away from clients. You have to be okay with that. And you have to be devastated when that really good client leaves.
Yes.
One that you didn't want to lose, right?
Yeah.
But you do have to be okay walking away from clients. If you need that client to keep paying the bills, you're in a bad place.
Yes. So in your opinion, what would you consider a difficult client?
There's a couple sides to this. There's the really basic, obvious thing. The client who is always paying late,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, okay, goodbye. So that's like an obvious problem client. There's another difficult client where, and this doesn't just exist in the legal world, but I think it probably is exacerbated in legal. We just call it the bully, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who I am going to get as much out of you as I possibly can
mm-hmm.
by constantly being unhappy. And so we have a quadrant where we look at, like, if we're doing a really good job for you and you're constantly unhappy, maybe go somewhere else.
Right? Yes. And I would also say it would kind of tie into the bully a little bit, but also the time suck, difficult client.
So those two they're very correlated, right? So
yeah.
The bully typically gets a lot more of your attention because they're constantly complaining. It is the unwarranted squeaky wheel.
Yeah.
And so those clients are problematic. They are persistently problematic, and they're not also not they're typically difficult to identify upfront, right?
Right.
So,
are
the clients where? Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
Are there any measures that you have put in place to help kind of weed that out up front? I know it's difficult, but, you know, having like, just doing your best to kind of manage those expectations, how much you're available, when you're available, that sort of thing. Do you do that at all?
I don't think we don't set guardrails in terms of availability and like how available we're going to be. We just don't.
Yeah.
But in terms of the upfront part, this is not a very good, this is a bad MBA answer, but I think it's actually a good answer. It's happened once where I've had those red flags about the prospect where I've been wrong, right?
Okay.
Every time you have those red flags about the prospect, listen to yourself because they always are a problem.
Yeah.
I've been wrong once.
Just go with your gut.
Go with your gut on that, right?
Yeah.
Go with your gut. Right. And so like I think about, so very pragmatically, I think about our contract. Our contract is written to be very much in our client's favor,
mm-hmm.
unless they don't pay us, in which case the scales flop completely.
Yes. So
if I have a client who wants to renegotiate a contract that's already heavily in their favor, like huge red flags,
mm-hmm.
you are a pain in the neck. if I have a client who doesn't, we try and set very specific precedent around payment. Like if you don't pay us, and we take money up front, so you pay for your monthly retainer on the first of the month.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't paid before your kickoff meeting, we push the kickoff meeting back, right?
Right.
Like it's a no joke, but it sets a precedent that like that's something that's not really, we're not bending on. And
yeah,
I have the person who pushes that back is not the relationship person. It's my HR office manager, accounting person, right? So she's the bad guy. It's not the relationship person. But like, hey, Jen won't let us start because we haven't received payment yet, right?
Yeah, yeah. So really putting those boundaries in place is something that you have to do. Just being, not bending, because if you bend once, you know, it's just going to be a recurring problem. You've just got to have those strong boundaries put in place.
100%.
100%. Yeah.
And like the reality is, In pragmatically, like it's always one-off relationships. I have a Canadian client who keeps trying to pay me in Canadian dollars. Dude, isn't that how this works? Right? Like, and we argue about it all the time.
You'd be taking a substantial hit if you're accepting those Canadian dollars.
And he knows that. And I'm like, come on, dude. He's one of those guys where you're just like, don't push me too far, dude.
Because yeah,
we're not having this conversation again. He's been like 2 years of trying to, you know, take advantage of the exchange rate. Come on.
That's, yeah, that's, yeah, glaringly obvious.
Totally.
So when do you decide to let a problem client go?
As soon as possible. Right?
Yeah.
And so like when agencies hire employees, like the first 3 months should really be considered probation, but it's the same with clients, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So we try and do this as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to have a practice where every 6 months we would talk about who are our bottom 10% of clients. So, all right, we're running 188 clients.
Interesting.
Let's talk about the 19 worst clients and whether or not we want to continue working with them, right?
Okay.
So we kind of systematized this, and it's actually become more efficient than that. Like, you know, pretty quickly if you've got a problem client, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we try and walk away from those clients as soon as possible. Like within, I think the last clients we fired, it's been within, you know, certainly within 2 months, probably within 4 weeks.
Yeah. Well, it makes so much sense, you know, then it's just freeing up you and your team, freeing up space so that you can bring on more clients that you want to work with and who are going to be happy and who are going to refer you guys out to bring on more clients.
Yeah. You know, the breaking up is hard to do thing is very real.
Yeah.
And so it's like relationships. It's easier to realize that this is not a good match early on.
Yeah.
You're always mad.
like, what did I do?
You're unhappy and you're not paying us on time and you're complaining and you're abusive to my staff.
Yes.
And you're mad that we want to split up. Like, maybe it's not me, maybe it's you.
How do you handle someone who is abusive to your staff? Like, do you give them like a warning or two? Because that's kind of a non-negotiable in my books.
Yeah, so this is going to come across as patronizing and potentially sexist.
Mm-hmm.
I've definitely watched some of my clients do not work well with my female employees.
Interesting.
And they're like, and this is an old school.
And then, so these are your male clients don't work well with your female employees. Some of them.
And this is a broad brushstroke, which is unfair, but you definitely have, I definitely hear words like, we'll have one of the girls at the front help you with that, right? One of the girls at the front, really? Like, it's 2023.
Yeah.
Bunker. So there is that element where there's like a dismissiveness around my female employees, which I like as a employer, there's two competing things that I try and balance in my head. One is I don't want Jill to not have an opportunity at Mockingbird because this client is a sexist piece of shit. Right?
Yeah.
We already talked about
So,
for those of you listening, Julia asked me if I had any questions before we started recording. I said, can I swear? And she said, please don't. So I just caught myself there. But
in this situation, it would be acceptable to swear.
I don't want to limit my female employees' opportunity because I have a client like that.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, I don't want to put my female employees in a really uncomfortable situation where they're being disrespected on a regular basis.
Absolutely, right?
And so like that's one of the things that I think about. The other, and this isn't necessarily abusive, but you know, you're constantly unhappy, and you start copying me on emails to try and get, you know, Bill in trouble.
Yeah.
Like that's the bully, and that's where, you know, we typically will kind of
like, all right, this isn't working out too well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, that's interesting. Do you have an example of a client where maybe you weren't on the same page and when it came to having that working relationship, but then after communicating, you were able to turn that relationship around?
Oh, absolutely. Right. Like, and so I almost called you earlier this morning, like right before we did recording,
mm-hmm.
we had a conversation. This is a longstanding client. So this is my VP of customer success dealing with a longstanding client who's pretty much pushing us around on something.
Okay.
And they want to do something their way and we want to do a different strategy and we're really butting heads on this. And it's a longstanding client. We've done an amazing job for them.
Mm-hmm.
They spent a lot of money with us. What do we do? Right. And so, you know, we kind of want to do it our way and they want to do it.
Yeah.
Very simply, what we need to do and what the internal meeting was we can be happy to be wrong about this. And ultimately, we're going to let the clients, the performance of the campaign speak for itself. And if we're wrong and the client's right, great. Like, we need to take our hubris out of this to want to be right about this. Now, they are paying us for our expertise. My instinct is that my VP of advertising, who's been doing this for 25 years, probably knows a lot more about advertising than the client does.
Yeah.
And choosing creative. But here's the thing. I could be wrong. I could be totally wrong.
Yeah, it happens. Chances are not, that won't be the case, but yeah, it could happen.
So we need to have the humility to go back to the client and say, we're very happy to be wrong on this.
Right? Mm-hmm.
But if we do it your way, like, we're just an order taker at this point. We're just doing what you want us to do. And I can't take any credit for the success, but I'm also not going to take the rap for the failure.
And exactly. So,
this is a simplistic answer, but it's the right answer. We're running this. The client is going to invest more money in order for us to run a split test on this. And we're going to end up with an I told you so.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And I'm watching this now. It's very adversarial. It's a little bit of a bully situation. They think they know better. Maybe they do. And we need to have the humility to accept that that might be the case. But they also need to have the budget. They're not hiring us to create ads. They're hiring us to build the strategy for the right ads to hit the right people at the right time.
Yeah.
And so if they're right, like, we're an order taker, but we've ended up with the right result for the client. Now, I'm 90% certain that they're wrong, but we need to have the humility to be wrong.
Yeah. No, that's a really interesting situation. So, yeah, but that's a really good point to note whenever you get into that situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are some lessons you've learned from managing clients over the years?
The client is not always right. That is super, super important.
Mm-hmm.
We have a list of 10 commandments. One is don't make our clients happy, make them successful. Like, our job is not to
Ooh, I like that.
Your bad ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, and this goes back to, like, difficult clients. Like, the client is not always right. In fact, in many, like, if the client is always right, why the hell are they hiring you?
Yeah, yeah, it's
like,
true.
They don't need you. Like, come
yeah.
on. So the client is not always right. That's a really key thing. Another thing that's really important for us is our relationships with clients are so much better when we are speaking in their business terms.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And I think, especially in the legal industry, there's been a lot of education among lawyers around what are meta descriptions and H1s and NAP and this and that. And like, so we can have, and they know the Dunning-Kruger effect. They know enough to have a conversation, but they don't know enough to actually move the needle, right? And so,
right.
So you can end up in a lot of these conversations that are, frankly, pointless.
Mm-hmm.
So why are we having these conversations? Why are we talking about H1 tags? Why are we talking about Core Web Vitals? Why are we talking about, you know, any of this stuff? Why aren't we talking about what they, what their business foundation, like, what matters to you?
Mm-hmm.
What is your revenue, right? Like, where do you want to go? What's the appropriate cost per client? How much are your clients worth to you? What's the lifetime value of a customer? Those are things that they know, even if they're lawyers and not thinking about it from a business perspective, but they're stuck in their lawyer mindset. They already know that, yeah, my clients spend $10,000 on average, and so my cost per client, if my cost per client is $2,000, that means I work for Google on Mondays, but, you know, Tuesday mm-hmm. and Friday, like, they know that. It's not that hard. So getting into the client conversations. And so our best relationships are when, and it's awkward, are when we talk about revenue. Where are you today? Where do you want to go?
Yeah. You're talking about the things that they really care about and understand at the end of the day. Yeah.
So do you want to have a conversation about H1 tags, or do you want to talk about, hey, we're 20% behind our revenue targets for this year. How are we going to fix that? It's the latter all day long.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And then when you start talking about those things, you can expand what you're doing. So one of the values that we bring to, this is this like so obvious, and yet no agencies that I know of are doing this. We talk to our clients about their answer rate, their phone call answer rate, right?
That's
How
cool.
How frequently do you answer the phone? Like, that data's out there, but like, yeah. why, if you're answering the phone 80% of the time, that means your marketing budget is 20% less effective than it could be.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like,
it's so true. So many digital marketers, they take you like 80% of the way, and they don't cover like, yeah, like what you're saying, like the answer rates, or like even like maybe their closing on the other end is really weak. You know, they're, right. Yeah, they just don't even know what to do when they get these leads to close the sale. So 100%. It's, so, there's definitely a need for that, I think.
And if you just look at your job as a digital agency in terms of we're driving leads,
mm-hmm.
So to use a football analogy, you can get the ball to the 1 yard line over and over again, and then the client fumbles it because they're terrible at converting that prospect into a client.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, yep.
in the e-commerce world, it's, you know, landing page or conversion rate optimization testing. But for us in a service business where the conversion happens offline or over the phone or over Zoom,
mm-hmm. right,
that's still a big part of whether or not the client, that's a bigger part of whether or not the client is successful than a lot of the marketing work that you guys are doing. So
yeah.
Why do we stop at the 1 yard line?
Such a good point. I love that. Well, we're getting ready to wrap up here shortly. Is there anything else you would like to add on the topic of dealing with difficult clients?
Sure. I'll because I deal with lawyers and contracts a lot, I'll give you my hints on contract. Most people have their contract designed to describe the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely the wrong perspective. Your contract needs to describe the relationship when it blows up. Okay.
And that's smart.
Really, really important. It's a prenuptial, right? To stick with the legal theme, maybe too far. But you need to be thinking about breaking up with that client and having your contract designed around that. So what we really try and do is make it really easy for us to break up with a client. Right. And a lot of agencies are super petty when they lose a client and they'll make it difficult. Your job is to have that when that breakup happens, and it'll happen for a variety of reasons. You want the client leaving with a sense of regret. Like, oh my gosh, they did an amazing job of breaking up with me, and I'm in control now. Nothing went haywire. They've transferred everything over. Like, they work really nicely with my other agency. Maybe I made a mistake, right? And
yeah.
Even if they don't feel like they made a mistake, they leave going out wanting to refer you, right? That's awesome.
Exactly. Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah, and not, you know, like if it was a bad breakup and you're able to smoothly transition everything over, like at least not like drag your name through the mud in any way. So they're going to have 100%. That respect factor. Yeah.
100%. So even if it's a bad, and this is really hard, even if it's a bad breakup, it's an abusive client, they don't pay their bills, all this stuff, we always take the highest road we possibly can when we leave.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's so important. Yeah. And that's awesome.
Hard, right. Honestly, like I've had clients who totally took advantage of us and screwed us. And you're like, I hate them.
Mm-hmm.
But you always leave.
Yeah.
The highest road you possibly can. And
yeah.
It's not. Yeah. And you wake up in the middle of the night and you're pissed and like, yeah, get over yourself. Like that's owning a business.
So where do you see Mockingbird Marketing in 5 years' time?
I think that most agencies are evolving to more of a business consultancy. We talked about like the fumbling the ball on the 1 yard line.
Mm-hmm.
That's outside of like my personal thing is SEO. I'm an SEO dude, right? But
mm-hmm.
I think agencies need to evolve beyond that. And we're working hard to continue to evolve beyond, you know, making your phone ring, right?
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. So we are getting ready to wrap up here shortly, but first we have the Fast Five, which are 5 rapid fire questions. So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
Best book, Service Marketing, there's a book by Harry Beckwith called Selling the Invisible. I have sent probably 100 copies of that to clients. It talks about marketing, the differences in marketing a service compared to a product. And it's amazing. It's old. It's at least 20 years old. It's fantastic.
Very cool. Definitely got to check that out.
Yeah.
And what does your morning routine look like?
Oh, so this is the problem with working at home. I'm always at work.
Yeah. Right?
And so I'm really deliberately, I now walk the kids to the bus, even though my kids are in high school, like I spend time walking the kids down the street to the bus, right?
Yeah.
And I have breakfast with them. Because otherwise, it's so easy to wake up and walk into your office and like, I would otherwise start my day at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. What is work-life balance? It's just, yeah.
Yeah. And so there's been a lot written about, we're not working at home, we're living at work. And I've mm-hmm. definitely fallen into that latter category. It's not good.
Yeah.
I try and use my morning routine to break that.
That's good. And is there a CEO that you follow or study?
Bluntly, no. I will tell you a lot of the way I run the organization is based around my lessons working for Mark Britton, who was the CEO of Avvo.
Okay.
And so we've emulated a lot of the way the business works from my experience working with him. He was a great CEO.
Very cool. Love that. And what is your favorite online tool?
Screaming Frog. Super nerdy answer. An SEO diagnostic that like you can just find so much stuff there.
Okay.
So if you're an SEO nerd, honestly, if you're an SEO person and you don't use Screaming Frog, you're not an SEO person. Right? Like, it's arrogant to say, but like it's true.
Nice. Okay. And then last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
Oh boy. Um, one thing I wish I'd known when I began my career. I'll tell a story to answer your question.
Sure.
I had a prospect call me 3 weeks ago. She had a very simple problem, and we, instead of turning her into a client, I spent 30 minutes fixing her problem during that call, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we literally got into her Google My Business, we made some changes, and I said, let's see how this performs for you, and call me back in a month if you still need help, right? And we can talk about your ads campaign, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
3 weeks later, 2 weeks later, she sends me this email. She's like, oh my gosh. It was like that gushing email where, like, I have made a massive impact in her business in 30 minutes. I charge her nothing for it. Like, it's bad business school answer. But like, it was so easy and obvious to me.
Yeah.
The joy of getting that is amazing. The
yes.
joy of getting the, I still have it. It's sitting here right on my desk. I have a handwritten thank you from a prospect who called me, and I went over their stuff, and I'm like, listen, your agency's doing a great job. You shouldn't hire us.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And this guy sends me this handwritten thank you note for like, hey, thanks for validating that I'm in good hands, right? That type of stuff, like the joy in that.
Yeah. Awesome. I love hearing entrepreneurs say things like that because, yeah, it's just like, it's so honest and real. And at the end of the day, you want to honestly help people, right? You don't want to just take their money for the sake of taking their money. I love that.
There's a beauty of, you didn't need me. I helped you anyway. And you're better off for it. Like that's, and I think that the lens on this for me is I'm dealing with people who are running a business. So like what I'm doing, what we do is I make sure that you can send your kids to college, that you can pay your mortgage, maybe you buy the cabin at the lake, right? You can like, that's really what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to play a small part in that, that's amazing. I don't think I understood that when I started my, I know I didn't understand that, but like being able to play a part for my clients in their future.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. That's
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. It's so cool when you can almost feel like a partner with them in that regard and help them reach their goals at the end of the day.
Totally. Like my second client who's still a client, they were three guys, started a law firm. They now have 21 offices around the country.
That's so crazy. Cool. Yeah. That's
super crazy. And like, not all my clients look like that. And I played, you know, 2% of that, 1% of that, but I got to play in that. And that's super cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Conrad. It was a pleasure having you on, and I really appreciate you joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast. And we'll see you next time.